Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode 20 of The Weird Thing. Today is the first of our three episodes doing a deep dive into ancestors and ancestor work. And today I have with me team members Joachim.
Hello.
And Frigga.
Hi.
And we are talking through the ancestral field today. So, Frigga, would you like to talk us through maybe what the ancestral field is, and then from there we can maybe start exploring how it relates to contemporary heathenry and to intersectionality?
Yes, I would love to. I would like to start with having a look at mythology, because there is so much to tell about how I perceive and how I see the ancestral field that it's chaos in my mind. And I hope we can get some line into it, because there are many ways you can look at the ancestors. If you look at it from the point of view from the mythology, you can see that there is more than one place where the dead dwell. I guess the most well-known most likely is Valhalla. Mm-hmm. But to me, as a Frizz weaver, I say that's unfortunately, because that means the focus is on violence. It said the slain, those who fall on the battlefield, go to Valhalla. Actually, only those the goddess Freya doesn't choose, because they join her in her half Folkvanger. Still, the focus with these two places seem to be on men, although amongst warriors one could expect also diversity. Another place is Light Alfheim. It's interesting to me that this world is both seen as the world of the light elves and of the ancestors. And I perceive it is both at the same time. And I perceive it as a very lovely and friendly world. And then if you go to another place, it's Helheim. And that is called the world of the dead. Balder dwells there in the hall of the goddess Hel. And the Edda layer follows, but tells that Woden, to me the same as Odin, wakes up the seeress sleeping in this world to be able to ask her questions. Some other things to keep in mind is that as heathens, we often talk about the halls of the ancestors. And if somebody dies, we ask the ancestor to welcome the deceased in their halls. Some believe that they will join their patron deity. I guess this also could apply for the spirits. Maybe it would be interesting to do some cider research to find out if there are ancestors amongst the dwarves and the giants and the elves. I am wandering through the Germanic field for about 30 years. And I heard people talk from many angles, of course, about all kinds of things. But today we talk about the ancestors. And some people only honor their direct family line. But to me, I see it broader. I talk about the ancestral field. Then I talk about every person that died only recently, all the way to the beginning of humankind, all the way to the well. And within this field, you could define all kinds of smaller fields, like a family field, a religious field, periods on time, and so on. The way I experience it, the general or collective ancestral field is, to my experience, a sort of source of insight, protection, healing, wisdom, balance, and much more. And due to my experience for many years, I have my own concepts I work with. At the same time, I leave things open because I learned different approaches can work next to each other at the same time. For example, I believe in reincarnation, and who knows where it is possible to reincarnate in the universe and beyond. All possibilities I mentioned before are just examples to me where ancestors might dwell. And I also think that not all souls that once dwelt the earth stay in a collective ancestral field. So I came up with the idea of a blueprint of each life is left behind in it.
Could you clarify if you say not all souls that once dwelt the earth stay in the collective ancestral field?
Then you go to soul lore. I mean, the thought is that we are, as a human being, part of different aspects. The body itself, a soul, and spirit, mind. The way of thinking is that the soul leaves the body when you die. And there are those who think that the soul goes back to some very huge, big collective soul. And then you have, then is my thinking, but where is remains or stays the person, the life experiences?
Yeah.
And that is how I came to the idea of a blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
And that souls, and there might be, I think we'll talk about it later, there are people who before they die consciously decides that they will stay awake after death, because that's what we talk about, that when somebody dies, the person goes to sleep.
Let's talk about that later. I was triggered by, if not all souls stay in the collective ancestral field, where do the souls go that don't stay in this collective ancestral field?
Haha. Now you only talk about souls, and I talk about the dead, and I don't separate the person from the soul when I talk about the ancestors. I leave open where they go to. I talk about from my experience how I perceive it and what I work with.
Mm-hmm.
So you've covered quite a lot there, starting with sort of the mythologies that we have, those understandings from the sagas, from the texts, from the Eddas of what happens after death, and then thinking about, you know, how your own personal understanding is of this, that we have this concept of the ancestral field, as in a place in which all ancestors are present, are linked together, are connected, that we can work with or communicate with or link to ourselves. Have I got that right?
Yes. And what I also would like to mention, if you talk with heathens, people refer to our ancestors, and what they often mean is the period of time of the Germanic peoples. Yeah, you can work in that way you can connect with ancestors from that period and in that way, bits and pieces of the culture, the way, the spirit of time. But as I said before, to me, if I really start working with ancestors, if it's needed for healing for people, you can't just skip a couple of thousand years. And how many generations are that? Because all the people who lived before us somehow are part of what we grew into as humankind.
I like the idea of this huge ancestral field.
And ways to almost navigate that as well. And considering that we don't just have Germanic ancestors, but we have, ancestors who are closer to us, ancestors that are further away from us, and that almost becomes like constellations, like stars.
Yeah, if you think we all have, or most of us, or we're born from, two parents. And then you have four grandparents, which means you have eight great grandparents. So the generation before that is 16. Before that is 32. Before that is 64. Before that is 128, and so on. So it is going so rapidly in a wide range. It is a kind of wide triangle and not a direct line, not a linear line.
And if you say that you see the field way back to the well, do you take and you said also it's not only my my direct ancestors. Do you consider other people's ancestors also in the ancestral field? Because then it's not even a triangle, but maybe a square or a circle or whatever.
Yeah, you can. Yes, but if you look at it from the point from one person, then it's kind of a triangle.
Yeah, of course.
But even that triangle shows how many ancestors you have. Mm-hmm. If you go generations back and generations back. So that means that all these ancestors are also ancestors of a lot of other people.
Yeah.
In that way, it's not narrowed down to me anymore to one family or just one line. It are many lines going in many directions towards many people.
And I think now you say that most people think of ancestors as a line, that rings a bell with family trees, and that's always in the father's line in our society. Other societies are more focused on maternal lines, but even then it's only one of the parents.
Yeah, and that's a limitation, which is a pity. There is much more.
Yeah. I have a very practical question.
Mm-hmm.
When working with ancestors, when it's further away, they are used to an entirely different society. Maybe they don't know electricity, cars, and stuff. What is your experience with that?
That you have to explain to them that we're living in a very different time and age with different culture, with different approaches. Because what I saw happening more than once is that if you call upon ancestors from further back, or even it can be if there are different lines from different cultures, that you have to tell them. Because otherwise they might give you advice from their time and age. And they might advise you to hide yourself or to be careful. Things which are not necessary anymore hopefully not necessary anymore in the time we live. And that's to me to the same as to the gods and all other spirits. We have to educate one another.
and thinking about that, it's yes, they may come from a time when they didn't have water coming into a house or plumbing or central heating or didn't learn to drive a car or don't know what a car is and wonder where all the horses have gone. But I think they still have things they can teach us.
Going both ways on all levels. They can teach us things and we can teach things to them. For the first 15 years I was a heathen, the gods played the most important part in my life, and slowly the ancestors became more, or I became more of the ancestors, let's say it the other way around. And I was working with cider. I use cider if I talk about witchcraft, shamanism, healing in what I call the Germanic field. You know, this most obvious things come to mind often lately is that from, okay, but if I believe in the ancestors and I believe that our blueprints, then there are those in the Germanic ancestral field who practiced cider when they were alive. What I do is simply sit down, I called upon ancestors, and I just said out loud what I just expressed, when, hey, this pops to mind. And, well, yeah, suddenly there was a change in presence, and some of them showed up. And that was pretty interesting. And then I simply, on a later moment, I started calling them the cider mothers and the cider fathers. By now, I also use the cider siblings or the cider elders to use gender neutral language and to invite, you know, more variety of people instead of only thinking in male and female. And so on a later moment, I started calling upon them more, and I just took them on a tour through my house. And I explained to them, this is my sacred cider objects I have made. And I explained them techniques I learned, modern techniques, like working with muscle testing. And I just told them all that. And at least some of them, I had this feeling, just, you know, listening to me, even, oh, this is interesting. What can we learn from that? And how can we use that? And yeah, I like that. That is going both ways. And I definitely learned a lot from them.
And that kind of understanding that we have, people in our past who used cider, who had trades, who were masters of their craft. It's quite a new concept for me, is that when I imagine the ancestors, I tend to have them as quite almost blurry. They're not very in focus sometimes. And the more recent ones, the ones I knew when they were alive, they're the ones that are stood right at the front, but people behind them tend to not be as focused. So to think of them in that way as masters of cider practice or masters in trades, that's a new kind of thought for me.
Yeah, at one point it was for me as well.
So thinking about this understanding of an ancestral field or constellations of ancestors, of thinking of them as at different, in different groups that overlap each other, is there a theory behind that, or is there somebody's work that influences that for you?
Yeah, then I have to mention Daan van Kampenhout. He is a Dutch shamanic worker, and he also works with family constellations. And he combines his experience from shamanic work and family constellations, and he called that systemic ritual. And yeah, I think he is of a huge influence on the way I think, partly his theories on it, and due to the seminars of him I followed and the many constellations I saw. And if I think back of that, I'm still impressed of what I learned from that. Before I go into that, I want to take a little step back the way I often perceive it, and I heard from other people, if you talk about the ancestral field and if you do a ritual, like the ritual which is described in the saga of Eric the Red, the seeress who is going into trance, and the people can ask her questions. I know by now that a lot of heathens all over the world have come up with their own ritual to do that. And then you perceive the ancestors are some kind of collective, and it is not one voice you hear when you're in trance, but several voices. And it is up to the seer to pick out one of the voices, and yeah, somehow that's the voice which maybe is the loudest or gets your attention the most. So I also can relate if you say that that you might perceive the ancestral field as that the ones that are died more recently are still more focused on the living. And again, we talked about that, or the way we talk about is that they are, that the dead are asleep. So yeah, if they are asleep, then there is no focus on anything. So there are so many ways you can look at it. And I have the feeling that I'm completely chaotic about it again. Due to that.
No, I don't think you're very chaotic. It's just a topic that has a lot of aspects.
Yeah, and one of the things I'm preparing on this episode, I looked through notes I made during seminars of Dan. What he told is indeed that ancestors, I will just read it out loud. Ancestors who have not been dead for a very long time often largely retained their personality, and their attention is often still focused on the living. The further back, the less personality is left. Attention is increasingly shifting towards the place where the people are, the dead among each other. Ancestors sink into a kind of sleep state and sometimes have to be woken up again. It is necessary to help remember the ancestors, to remember the family ties. So that's a bit on the contrary what I say from, no, not on the contrary. That is why I start thinking in ways of a blueprint. And I don't know if I work with the ancestral field, if I work with a person or just with the blueprint. And maybe it's other ancestors who are awake who represent that blueprint. It's all possible to me. I'll leave it open. I can only tell what works for me, the way I perceive it. And again, at the same time, I leave it open.
Yeah. Does it matter for your work how it's...
No.
So it's nice to discuss and to philosophize?
Yes, I think philosophize. And we need concepts to work with.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I think for me, what is interesting about what you were saying is how you've taken the not only the mythology, but also the theory around ancestral fields, family constellations, and started exploring and developing that for yourself. And also having now sort of left room for that to develop further, for there to be more thought on how that works for you and how it is evolving as you experience it, it changes and evolves and deepens as you work.
Maybe I can ask a simple question then, or a simple probably not very simple. However, you said some ancestors sink into a kind of sleep state.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to be woken up again.
Mm-hmm.
What is your experience with that? Is it easy to wake up ancestors or not? Or does it depend or vary?
It vary. It depends on. But I can recall one time we were talking with the ancestors. And I sometimes talk in we. And we is the people over the years I worked with and experienced and developed our way of cider. So it's not a royal we. But I do owe the people of Bladgoed Bedrad over the years and people who joined in my workshops. I learned from all of them. We were once a boy needed a young kid, I think about 10 years old, needed, he experienced spirits. And he wasn't sure how he felt about it. So we talked to ancestors we worked with, among the cider fathers and the cider mothers. And they thought it'd be to be a good idea if one of his own ancestors would keep an eye on him. And we work with to be taking over by a spirit and let a spirit talk through you. So on one moment we were sitting there with talking with one of the cider fathers, and he came up with, no, he needs a ancestor of his own. He was gone, and it's just split seconds. There was another talking, the body of a friend of mine, and sitting there very confused. So what happened? The cider father just put somebody out of his sleep and put him in a body.
That's weird.
So we were sitting there a little confused because that's the first time that happened. And the ancestor was sitting there a bit, you know, confused. But I was asleep, and where am I, and what is happening? But once we explained to him what just was happening and what we are talking about, and that one of his descendants need his help, he was all attention and all willing to be there for this little boy.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that usually the case that if you explain it, that it's about a descendant, that they are willing to cooperate?
Yes, mostly. But I'm going to step back. If you talk about the collective field in general, there is a lot of attention for the living. There is a lot of love, support, strength, wisdom, knowledge. If you go into the family fields, that can be different, because there can be a lot of problems in a family field. And of course, also among the ancestors, there are the ones that we call not nice, not friendly. They stayed as they were alive. And well, that's why if I call upon, whether it's the gods or the spirits or ancestors, I always say something in the lines of, those who care about us, those who inclined to honor Frizz, to put in some kind of protection that not the morons will show up.
Yeah.
So you're talking there about working with sort of almost smaller ancestral fields, like smaller groups of ancestors?
Mm-hmm.
And how they might be defined by particular things, but also, yeah, you were saying they're being safe when you're working with ancestors.
Yes. Yeah, but with all this kind of work, you have to be aware that you put a protection and that you always be alert.
Mm. So thinking about diversity and different identities that would have existed in the past and exist now, for a smaller ancestral field, could you give some examples of smaller types of fields somebody might want to work with?
Yeah, I guess I mentioned them before. You can, of course, the first one is the family field, direct family and your direct ancestors. You can think in religion, the religious field, and I've mentioned that before. For heathens, that is the Germanic ancestral field, periods in time. Working with witchcraft has a lot to do with imagination. Use your imagination and you'll come up with so many things. So it is only recently, and due to the Weird Thing podcast and talking way more about inclusivity and diversity, is that it came to my mind that there must be a Kilpak ancestral field.
Mm. Oh, sort of LGBT ancestors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There must be.
That makes sense.
There must be so many fields I'm not even aware of, because it's simply not in my thinking at all, or not yet, maybe, that people find each other, the dead find each other. And if I look at the Western world and all the ages of Christianity, where it was not easy for killed back people, that they found one another, or at least hopefully a lot of them found one another in their own safe space amongst the ancestors.
So thinking about, we now have those definitions, those terms like quilt bag or LGBT plus, but for people in our ancestral field, they might not have identified with those terms, yet still might be part of that field?
Yes, in a way, I think it is. More people are working with it in this way or another way, similar. So I think that field is getting attention now. And I also think, I mean, what we use now is chosen family.
Mm.
And that applies for LGBT people and also, of course, in other situations. So there are also chosen ancestors. I think that the LGBT, please, can I stick to Kilpak? Otherwise, I'm losing all the letters.
Please do so, yes.
As many other fields do need healing, because there are a lot of damaged people in it, because what have been done to them over so many centuries. Me, as a frizz weaver and a healer, then I would like to offer my assistance, my help to bring healing, to bring balance. So I come up with rituals need to be done. And we made a start of that. Jochen was there and some other friends when we had our autumn blood. Because when I start working with the ancestors and rituals like this, I think it's just to be polite to call upon them and introduce ourselves and explain what is on our minds, and not just rushing into such a field, because then you do the same what always happened. You just stamp over them, you stamp, you don't respect borders and that kind of things.
Mm.
And then I start calling upon the general ancestral field and explain what is on my mind, and then I wait for ancestors to show up. And yeah, the response we felt is that there is definitely such a field and healing is needed. And I think I will be with this field even more careful than I am, or maybe I'm more aware of things, that we will first ask the field what it needs and not just I said marching in there, and, oh, we're going to bring healing. No. I mean, because then we decide what they need, and it should be the other way around. The respect that's always needed, that I offer it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to listen to the ancestors, what they need and what they tell us they need. And maybe, no, that didn't happen, because it clearly is that there's going to be interaction, and is there going to be healing, and we will find out how it's going to be. But always be aware that they might say, no, we don't want anything, or we don't want to deal with you.
Mm.
I can remember one time we went to the Hunebedde in the eastern part of the Netherlands. You know, this big, huge, is it called boulders, stones, which are grace from a long time ago. And we went there the dolmens, with a handful of people, and had in mind to do this on cider and get in contact with ancestors. And so we went there, we find a nice one, sit down, made contact, explained what we're coming to do. And they said, no. And at first we were looking a bit at one of them. No, nope. You're welcome to be here. Enjoy your beer, but we don't want contact and we don't want such a ritual.
Mm.
Okay.
That's clear.
Yeah, that's clear. And you simply respect that.
So while you were talking there, I was thinking on the fact that some of my ancestors were probably quilt bag ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about working with that field, that's a very easy thought for me to have, because I share that identity. But for somebody who is straight, who maybe doesn't and has never thought about their ancestors in that way, that might be quite a tricky thought that they might need to think on. Maybe before they come to do that ritual or come to do that work, they may need to do some thinking within themselves first.
Yeah, I think that is wise. We come back to the last episode we made of season 2, how to be a good ally.
Mm.
And I think you need to feel comfortable, specific if you want to bring healing. I mean, if you are not comfortable with killed back people, then you might consider to do a ritual, unless you're willing to learn. And but then again, be honest. Just simply be plain honest. And one of the things I also do is that when I first make contact, and let's now stick to the killed back field as an example, is, as said, I introduce myself and I explain, and I ask for 2 or 3 ancestors in that field who are willing to communicate, who are capable of communication, because then you leave it to be a safe space for all others. Because I can imagine, I'm cisgender hetero, that they might not trust me due to that.
Mm.
So then simply ask for 1 or 2 or 3 ancestors who are capable, willing, who want to have that interaction. And they can be the voice for the entire field. They can be the mediator.
Mm.
I will not enter that field without permission. I mean, the collective ancestral field, I just go in. A religious field, I might just go in. But this field, I realize I will not go in without permission.
So it's like almost considering yourself as an ally to your ancestors.
Yes.
I like how that ties into the discussions that we've had before.
Mm-hmm.
There is healing needed in ancestral fields in many ways. And that's what I have learned over the years, perceived over the years, is that we can do things for the dead, for the ancestors, which they can't do themselves.
Mm.
And so it is this constant interaction and going in both ways. They can be very helpful to us. They can bring us wisdom, strength, healing, what we need. But it's also the other way around.
And I think for me, that's almost a whole new discussion in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that would be really good for the next episodes, especially with them focusing on this area of ancestors and ancestor work.
Frigga, you said that if you do ancestral work in a specific field, that you ask two or three ancestors as a kind of representatives of the for their safety. But if there is a lot of healing work to be done, I can imagine it is for your personal safety as well.
Never thought of it in that way.
I was just imagining if a lot of ancestors say, oh yes, yes, run towards you, that can be quite overwhelming, to say the least.
Yes. Yes, and I never thought it in this way, but indeed, if healing is needed, it can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
Again, it comes back to sit down and explain and tell them, hey, you are now overwhelming.
Ah.
We will listen, but please first tell us what you want to tell, what is needed, instead of overwhelming us. Because if you are, then it's going to be too much for us and we will not able or hardly able to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I can recall a time when healing was needed for a little boy and we were together for a workshop and we decided that it would be a nice gesture to empower again a candle for the child. So we gave everybody the candle was passed on and everybody could empower it with whatever they felt proper. And suddenly my side co-worker and I were crying and felt swept off our feet and overwhelmed with grief and fear. And we were looking at one another, okay, what is going on? And then we realized that the ancestors had said, okay, but you are listening. We can communicate with you. And we simply told that. We told them, please, we are at the beginning of a workshop. So it's for us not the time, but we will listen to you later on today.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did. We had a workshop. We went home. We had dinner and then we sat down. And again, it was when we called upon them, it was so overwhelming. But then we were able to tell, please draw back a little. We will listen.
Yeah.
We are totally willing to cooperate with you. Do the healing part, which is needed as far as we can do it. But you have to draw back. Because this is too much grief, because we now feel the grief and the pain and the anger and the fear of generations.
Oi, that is a bit much.
That is too much.
Yeah.
And then you feel that it is fading away and then you can start communicating.
Mm. Yeah.
So always pay attention to your own boundaries. And if needed, just take a step back. And tell them. And what I always say, if it's good ancestors, then they will listen. Because then they don't want to harm you. It's just, you know, they are overwhelmed. They are stuck into where they are.
And maybe if they have been asleep for a very long time, they may have forgotten about humans and how it how it is to be human?
Yeah, that kind of things might play a role. But it's sad if it's pain and grief of many generations, it's a lot. How many ancestors are you talking about?
Yeah. And if listeners who listen to this episode and like to do some ancestral work for themselves, or if they don't do it already, do you have some tips for people how they can start doing ancestral work?
Keep it simple. As I said before, just sit down and do a small ritual. Do some kind of protection ritual that you might already be accustomed with, like a hemorrhoid. Light a candle. And then just sit down and talk out loud. That's what I always do. Sit down and talk out loud and just say, "Hello, ancestors. Here I am. This is my name. I would like to get in touch with ancestors in general." Or and you can even tell that you are feeling shy or feeling uncomfortable, or be honest. And then sit still and feel. And you might feel a presence. There might words pop up in your mind. Or maybe it can be the next day that you read something in a book or on the internet, which, oh, wow, but that looks like the answer to my question or what is going on in my mind. Trust yourself.
Yeah.
And you've finished the ritual. Say thank you. Just be polite.
That's sounds easy enough to do.
It is, if I may say that, with rituals in general, with cider work in general, it depends on the person who you are, whether you need a lot of whatever to help you to become relaxed or into the proper state of mind. Or it can be so simple. So if you need more things to do, then please do so.
Yeah, today has been a fascinating discussion, listening to you both just talk through maybe thoughts on ancestors, how we work with ancestors, how we might perceive our ancestors, how we might start looking at a framework for working with them. So please, listeners, come and join us for our next episode, where we continue our looking at our exploration of ancestors, looking at, again, this topic, which is it's almost infinite in how we can approach it, how we can look at it, looking at that again in our next episode. So I would like to thank you, Joachim, and you, Frigga, for your comments and thoughts today and exploring the topic of ancestors, or starting this 3-episode deeper dive into ancestors and ancestor work. If you would like to find us online, listeners, you can do. You can find us on our website at The Weird Thing. You can also find us on social media. If you do want to give any of our past episodes a listen, they are all up and available for you to listen to. We have also got the transcripts available for you as well. So do come and join us for our next episode, where we continue this exploration into ancestors and working with ancestors. And we will all talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.